Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, listener mail. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I am Joe McCormick, and it's Monday, the day of each week that we read back messages to the Stuff to Blow Your Mind email address. If you have never gotten in touch before and would like to give it a shot, send something, please. You can reach us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com. Whatever you want to send is fair game. We appreciate all kinds of messages, especially if you have something interesting to add to a recent topic we've talked about. Let's see, Rob, I'm going to start with a message about the recent total solar eclipse that passed through the middle of the United States. We didn't do an episode about eclipses because we've done that in the past, especially tied to eclipses in the past. But we did do a Weird House Cinema episode on the movie Dragon Slayer because it features an eclipse. That'll come up again later in the episode. But we also just got a response seemingly about the eclipse itself. And this is from Hannah. Hannah says, subject line, moon exploration via swan power. Hannah says, hi, Rob and Joe. I'm helping my husband prepare a lecture that covers the eclipse for his physics students. I ran across this book and I had to share. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work. My best, Hannah. And what Hannah shares is a link to a 17th century book called The Man in the Moon. And this is moon spelled M-O-O-N-E. I like the extra E in there. It makes it fancier. It's almost like that's a more costly version of the moon. The Man in the Moon, or A Discourse of a Voyage Thither. So this is a book that was published under the pseudonymous name Domingo Gonzalez. The real author was an English bishop named Francis Godwin. And this is a novel that was published in 1638, several years after the author's death, said by some to be the first science fiction novel written in English. So it's a first-person narrative telling the story of a Spaniard named Domingo Gonzalez who travels to the moon on an aircraft powered by swans and discovers that the moon is filled with people who have an advanced civilization of their own and I think also are significantly involved in, like, kidnapping children from Earth.
On Caladan, we ruled with air and land power, but on Earth, we will rule with swan power.
How would you describe this swan machine? Like, there's an illustration on the inner fold of the title page I found. So we can look at this, Rob. It's like, it looks sort of like the swan copter. Well, it's got a mounted seat, really just kind of a crossbar on the bottom. And the rest is just bars. It's like an electrical transmission tower. And they taped a bunch of birds to the tower by the feet. And also in this illustration, they're like flying him over the moon or to the moon and passing over the mountain of purgatory.
Yeah. Oh, it raises a lot of questions. Yeah, it's kind of like a kite scenario. It looks like the bare minimum harvesting of the power of the swan. And the Mount of Purgatory being there also raises questions. Like, how does that factor into it? Are you using some sort of using that as some sort of like a slingshot technique, slingshotting off of the Mount of Purgatory via Eden, that sort of Edenic zone on the top, so that you can just go right to the moon? I don't know.
Purgatorio gravity assist. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I found a full text of this book, and I was scanning through it, and a few things caught my eye. First, I'll quote a passage here with some edits just describing how the character attains spaceflight on the Swancopter. He says, "It was now the season that these birds were wont to take their flight away, as our cuckoos and swallows do in Spain, towards the autumn. They, as after I perceived, mindful of their usual voyage, even as I began to settle myself for the taking of them in, as it were with one consent, rose up, and having no other place higher to make toward, to my unspeakable fear and amazement, struck bolt upright, and never did lin meaning cease, never did cease towering upward, and still upward, for the space, as I might guess, of one whole hour. Truly, I must confess, the horror and amazement of that place was such as if I had not been armed with a true Spanish courage and resolution, I must needs have died there with very fear. But the next thing that did most trouble me was the swiftness of motion, such as did even almost stop my breath. If I should liken it to an arrow out of a bow, or to a stone cast down from the top of some high tower, it would come far short and short." So he's describing like mind-bending speeds. And this passage starts to give a hint of how, interestingly, this novel is not just an exercise in imagination. It actually engages significantly with scientific theories of the day, of the 17th century, engaging with the works of Galileo and Kepler. For example, I came across a passage where the narrator is using his fictional observations to make the case that the Earth does in fact rotate, and it is not the heavens that spin around a stationary Earth. And the author also makes points related to the idea of gravity and to like the speed of the motion of the objects in the heavens and so forth.
Nice, nice. Kind of fitting then that we see the Mount of Purgatory in the background here, because as we've at least discussed in passing before, you know, you have a number of scientific ideas wrapped up in Dante's Divine Comedy as well. Something we might come back to again in the future and do a proper deep dive on.
Totally agree. Though I should be clear, I was just saying it's the Mount of Purgatory because it looks like it to me. I couldn't find that it says that in the text. Okay, that's just my editorial.
Well, I love the idea of it being the Mount of Purgatory. I accept no other interpretation.
However, there is another thing that I found really interesting about this book, which is that this early science fiction novel does mix in elements of horror. On the journey to the moon, while traveling through the space between, Gonzales is surrounded by spirits of a wicked nature. In his view, space is full of devils.
Mm.
I'm going to read from the text here. "Another thing there was exceeding, and more than exceeding, troublesome unto me, and that was the illusions of devils and wicked spirits, who, the first day of my arrival, came about me in great numbers, carrying the shapes and likeness of men and women, wondering at me like so many birds about an owl, and speaking diverse kinds of languages which I understood not." Do birds wonder about an owl? I'm not sure what that means, but I like the image. So anyway, the devils of the space make him all kinds of promises. They tell him they can take him safely back to Spain. They can give him earthly comforts and pleasures. He turns all this down, though he does accept some food they offer him. He writing, quote, "least in the mean while I should starve. They did so readily enough and brought me very good flesh and fish of diverse sorts, well dressed, but that it was exceeding fresh and without any manner of relish of salt. Wine also I tasted there of diverse sorts, as good as any in Spain, and beer no better in all Antwerp. But when it comes time to eat, things go south. He says he, quote, in great haste fell to searching of my pockets for the victuals I had reserved as aforesaid. But to my great amazement and discomfort, I found instead of partridge and capon, which I thought to have put there, a mingle mangle of dry leaves, of goat's hair, sheep, or goat's dung, moss, and such like trash. As for my canary wine, it was turned to a stinking and filthy kind of liquor, like the urine of some beast. So space demons are always trying to feed you goat hair and beast urine.
Oh, wow. That is all marvelous. I've so many thoughts on that. On one hand, kind of shades of Warhammer 40,000 to come there with this idea of traveling through space, putting you in demonic peril or potential demonic peril. And then kind of shades of the gate duology, the gate and the gate two, or gate two. A couple of wonderful kind of gremlin movies that discussed in Weird House Cinema with guest co-host David Streepy. Because in the second one, the demons will grant your wishes, but your wishes turn to literal poop the next day. So you wished for a sports car, well, guess what is now parked out in front of your house? It's an elephant-sized chunk of just fecal matter.
But I like that here he specifies what animal it comes from. Does the gate say what animal it comes from?
Or no, they don't really get into it. But it makes sense that it would be goat, given the demonic connotations there.
Have a label on it, is like the ones at the grocery store that tell you where the fish came from.
It's This is
from goat.
I don't know why goat dung would be worse. I've certainly been around goat dung before, and it's not the worst dung of all. Give me goat dung over dog dung or any kind of carnivore dung any day of the week.
It's funny, he does specify goats for the dung, but he does not, and for the hair, by the way, goat hair and goat dung, but does not specify which beast the urine is from.
Well, you can poke around in the fecal matter and you can make a lot of, there is a lot of identification via feces. Urine, however, is a more complicated matter that may require a bit of science or alchemy. And I guess actually goat dung, is round. So I guess you could tell. It's like, this is clearly goat dung. Look how round it is.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you so much, Hannah. It was very interesting looking into this book.
All right. Well, since we're talking about literature and demons, I'm going to skip to this one from Jim, responding to a mention of the short story, The Hounds of Tyndalos. This is a story, a weird story from the 1930s, actually 1929, according to this date I just looked up, by Frank Belknap Long. This was originally published in Weird Tales. And anyway, we heard some feedback here from Jim. Jim says, I'm thinking Robert may know this, but this tale was the inspiration for Metallica's thrasher All Nightmare Long, which was on their, in my opinion, underrated ninth studio album, Death Magnetic. I found an audio version of the story on Horror Babble, a podcast with a great narrator who does a lot of the old 30s sci-fi and horror fiction, including Lovecraft, Robert E. Howard, Clark Ashton Smith, and the like.
Well, thank you, Jim. I did not know the connection with that song. In fact, I did not know the song at all because so I grew up loving Metallica, but I have never really gotten into their 21st century stuff. And so I checked out the track. And I did not expect to like it. As an adult, my Metallica preferences have shifted toward the earliest of their catalog. Like the Metallica I like now is the stuff that is the most immature and antisocial, with the driest production, the stuff that tends to have like really fast, raw, a little bit sloppy, but still awesome instrumental performances, and lyrics that always vaguely imply the existence of some near future conflict called the Metal War, which I understand will be fought with metal over access to metal.
I think that's sound.
However, Jim, despite the fact that I have largely stayed away from recent Metallica, I dug it up and I thought this track was pretty good. I give it to him. Maybe it's that classic cosmic horror that puts the gang back into original form.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I was not familiar with this connection either. And I haven't really listened to any of the more recent Metallica albums. Though I have to say is I love the old stuff, but I also really love like some of the at the time latter day tracks like The Memory Remains. A lot of people hate that song, but I could never understand. I'm like, this sounds pretty good. Yeah, Marianne Faithfull's on this. I don't know. I like it. Had a cool video, but at any rate, that's fascinating though. I know that at least one or some of the members of Metallica do have a lot of love for some of the old Weird Fiction. You know, there are some Lovecraftian references on some of their older material. So it's not all that surprising that they would continue to find inspiration in work from this time period. When we recorded this episode, I mentioned that I had started reading The Hounds of Tindalos, but had not finished it. I finished it in the days following that initial episode. And I have to say, it's a real banger. I highly recommend this particular short story. Again, you can find like an ebook of this gentleman's work for like 99 cents. And also you can find it in, you know, text form online and all. But basically, skip now if you don't want any spoilers. But basically, again, a gentleman takes some time-traveling space drugs and experiences like all of human history and before human history all at once, and has all sorts of revelations, and it's just overpowers him. And then these strange creatures, the Hounds of Tindalos, begin to come after him through the corners of things, the unnatural corners of reality. So he has a very balanced response to this. He gets some plaster and he removes all of the corners from his home so he can live safely, so the hounds cannot get him. But then there is an earthquake, and it disrupts the perfection of these curves, and in come the hounds. And of course, the hounds destroy him. And then later, his friend comes in and finds him. I want to read just a quick quote here, just to give you a grisly taste of it. Quote, "Chalmers lay stretched upon his back in the center of the room. He was starkly nude, and his chest and arms were covered with a peculiar bluish pus or ichor. His head lay grotesquely upon his chest. It had been completely severed from his body, and the features were twisted and torn and horribly mangled. Nowhere was there a trace of blood." 1929. It hits pretty hard.
The horror of this period does love an unearthly jelly, doesn't it? There's got to be an ichor on there.
Yeah. So anyway, a very fun tale. I haven't read anything else by this author, but I have a whole book of his stuff now, so I'm going to have to get in there and find some other tales worth discussing. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Artesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. All right, next we got this message from Daniel on Facebook, on our Facebook discussion module. This was in response to our conversation about different names for what we call dust bunnies. Daniel says, in Swedish, a dust bunny is damrata, meaning dust rat, which seems even more fitting. A bunny is a cute, often domesticated animal. A rat is a bringer of decay and pestilence. I interpret Daniel to be saying in the popular imagination, you know, not slandering rats as an animal, though, of course, they do, in fact, in some cases, bring disease.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm not cutting rats any slack here. They're gross.
Daniel goes on, I had always assumed it would be the same in the other Scandinavian languages, but apparently not. Norwegian goes with husestove, house dust, straightforward but not very imaginative. Danish, on the other hand, seems to go the other way with nullermand, which translates to the ominous, the outright ominous nothing men.
Ooh, the nothing men are under your bed, sweetie. We have to clean tomorrow. Yeah, that definitely ominous. This is great. This is exactly what we wanted to hear from everybody. Because, again, I found, like, at least the resources that I was discovering online didn't have a lot about the various international terms for dust bunnies. So keep them coming. And thank you, Daniel, for writing in with this.
Yes, please. Yeah. And thank you, Daniel.
All right. This one comes to us from Harry. It says, hey, Rob and Joe, Harry from Stockholm here. Listening to your third dust episode on my way into work, I was struck by a scenario you mentioned just before diving in the Sorites paradox. This was the parable of the movie set designer who has no dust machine and must wait for the scene's requisite dust to accumulate. It struck me that this scenario is a good example of an observer's behavior changing the outcome of the observation. Like photons bouncing off electrons in quantum theory, the set designer's breath, their movement to and from the point of anxious observation, would inhibit the accumulation of dust by changing the air currents of the room. It tugs on the heartstrings to imagine the poor set designer as Tantalus, expectantly watching one spot for dust as other neglected surfaces of the set become dusty. Thanks and keep up the good work, Harry.
Oh, that's great, Harry. What a sad scene you've painted here.
I kind of want to see it as like a short film now. This is it could be quite interesting. The Dust Wrangler.
All right. We can finish up with a couple of messages about Weird House Cinema. This is from Liza. Liza says, hi, Rob, Joe, and JJ. Liza here, longtime listener, first-time writer. I just finished your Dead Mountaineers Hotel episode, and I have to say, growing up in Russia, I have never heard of this film. Perhaps it was too controversial or too dark in nature for its time. I ended up watching it as soon as I finished the episode, and boy, was I not disappointed. In answer to your question, the pool game they are playing is called Russian Billiard or Russian Pyramid. It's essentially the same as pool, but the balls are bigger, which makes it quite a bit harder to score.
Fascinating.
Liza says, I'm very excited to recommend you another Soviet sci-fi film called Ivan Vasilievich, Back to the Future. Unlike Dead Mountaineers Hotel, it is very much a comedy and an all-time classic, our version of Monty Python, one might say. Might not be the best fit for Weird House, as it's not horror by any means, but definitely a must-watch nonetheless. Best of luck and keep up the great work, Liza from Russia. Oh, and it just occurred to me that maybe Lisa, I don't know, Lisa or Liza. Thank you for writing in, yeah, and thank you for the recommendation.
Yeah, this film is completely off my radar. I am not familiar with it. All right, here's another Weird House response. This one is from Pat, and this is in response to our discussion of Dragon Slayer, which also gets into a brief discussion of just eclipse movies, solar eclipse movies in general, of which we said there are very few to choose from. Pat writes in and says, guys, another fun show. Best solar eclipse movie? A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. A very silly Bing Crosby musical. Thanks, Pat from Florida.
Yeah, I didn't consider this because I actually have not seen this movie, but it's weird to me that there would be a goofy Bing Crosby musical based on A Connecticut Yankee because, I mean, I guess the novel is funny, but so it's a satirical novel by Mark Twain, which is about a late 19th century engineer who gets knocked on the head and then wakes up in early medieval England, figures out the date and uses his knowledge of a coming solar eclipse to amaze the superstitious locals and eventually gain a position of power in King Arthur's court, where he tries to go on to turn medieval England into a democratic republic and give them industrial age technology and so forth. But the church and the aristocracy resist his reforms and revolt against him.
Yeah, I read this story when I was a kid, and I remember, I don't know, being at least mildly amused by it. I don't remember loving it. But, of course, it's been the basis for several films. Of course, the 1949 adaptation. Also, there is a 1979 film that is sometimes referred to as A Spaceman in King Arthur's Court. There is a 1995 film, A Kid in King Arthur's Court. And then, of course, there is the 2001 film Black Knight, starring Martin Lawrence as a time traveler.
I think it's interesting that it has all of these adaptations where the tone is quite silly. I guess maybe the tone of the novel is quite silly, but from what I understand, like the point of the satire is pretty sharp. Like it was a humorous attack on people who, on like medievalism, on people who had a romantic, idealized view of medieval European life, of monarchy and chivalry or knightly virtues, like what you would get in Ivanhoe by Walter Scott. Mm-hmm. And in the political context where Twain was writing, this romantic medievalist view was especially common among people who also romanticized the U.S. antebellum South and the Confederacy and the Civil War. So Twain, I think, with that association is reacting against that and painting a picture of knights and kings, not as noble and angelic beings, but as violent and ignorant hoarders of power. And I've not seen this movie from 1949, but it is funny to like think about it that way and then think they turned it into a funny musical starring Bing Crosby. But anyway, Bing Crosby musicals are not something I know a whole lot about. You know, it's I think the extent of my knowledge is having seen the Christmas one, whatever it is, what's the one where they're in the army and they're singing the White Christmas?
Yeah,
that's on in the background and around Christmas time. But that's about all I know. But I'm curious enough that I would give this a watch now. But to come back to the topic of the eclipse, like how it figures into the story, it seems like it fits with the themes because the knowledge of the eclipse that the main character possesses in the story sort of symbolizes the novel's view that, like, whatever the faults of the modern world, democracy and science and technology are better than kings and knights and superstition. And I am curious how sharply these themes come through in the musical.
Yeah, and I have these same questions about 2001's Black Knight starring Martin Lawrence, but co-starring Tom Wilkinson and also Kevin Conway. Kevin Conway is the narrator on the 1990s Outer Limits series. So he's the voice that comes in at the beginning and at the end of every episode and kind of like tries to wrap things up in this kind of nice philosophical packaging.
Okay.
So I don't know. If any of you have thoughts on the movie Black Knight, write in. Maybe it's worth looking at. Like I say, anytime I see interesting cast members, I'm kind of intrigued. And I guess the real core idea here is like just the basic concept of a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. It's a great fish out of time story. So
yes,
it's easy to apply it to various times, various actors, various comedic sensibilities, and so forth.
Yeah. Change the characteristics of the protagonist. And in any case, you could say something by like taking any particular person from the present and sending them to the past and seeing how would the past react.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to go ahead and close up the mailbag for this episode of Listener Mail, but keep it coming. We'd love to hear from you. We'll throw out that email address here in a minute. If you would like to join the discussion module on Facebook, well, just look it up. It's a Stuff to Blow Your Mind discussion module, and you have to ask to be admitted. All you have to do is succeed on a really softball trivia question about the show. And if you do that, then I guess you're probably an actual listener and you are not a robot, and you can enter and interact with other listeners to the show. And if you would like to have access to the Discord, well, just email us and we'll send you the link.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, JJ Posway. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.